You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as the countdown to fantasy football season is on. The countdown to preseason football is on. They kick off the National Football League preseason this Thursday. The Arizona Cardinals and the Dallas Cowboys. I can't wait. And in fact, we'll be watching this game at the Sheraton in San Jose, Costa Rica. What better way to kickstart the 2017 NFL preseason than with the IFBC, the International Football Betting Conference. August, we've got a lot of appearances. We're going to be speaking at the betting conference, and it will be appearing at the fantasy show August the 26th, the same day Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight in Toronto, Ontario. It's one of the biggest fantasy football shows of the summer. There's going to be like literally dozens of fantasy experts there. Make sure you join us. All right, so we got a lot of stuff going on. Steve Merrill, he was going to join us in Costa Rica, but his passport's expired and he can't get a new one in time. But he's going to join us today on the program. We'll talk some Major League Baseball with Steve, a little NASCAR with Steve. Kyle Busch finally wins. We told you guys, just take Kyle Busch on a weekly basis because you know the guy's finally going to get in the winner's circle, although it didn't really pay all that much. Major League Baseball trade deadline goes down at 4 o'clock Eastern. Toronto Blue Jays traded Liriano to the Astros. The Cubs pick up Avila. They pick up Wilson. The Avila deal has been going on for a while now, so there's no surprise there. As of right now, at least, I don't know. I don't have a computer right in front of me, but I know the boys in the booth will keep us up to date. And Yu Darvish is the big prize right now. Will the Los Angeles Dodgers be able to pull it off and get Yu Darvish? The Dodgers are pulling everything else off. If they get Yu Darvish, it could put him over the top. So we're going to keep our eye on that. We'll talk baseball. But if you're betting the baseball, you're playing fantasy baseball this evening, keep your eye on the trade deadline for obvious purposes. I can't believe it, but I guess here we are right now. I mean, the preseason is set to begin. But we've done 31 NFL team previews. Doesn't feel like we have. And in fact, sometimes I wonder, I'm like, you know what? Do we even talk about the Eagles? It's like, yeah, we did. We did. We talked about the Eagles. Today we talk about the Rams, the LA Rams. That is, and are the Rams going to be any better than they were last year when they were 4-12? It's our NFL preview finale today. We're going to jump in and talk more NFL from all kinds of different aspects and props throughout the week to get ready for the season. Excuse me. And Tony Cincata will be joining us on the program today to talk some fantasy football potential busts. Last week we talked about the sleepers, yet I got more sleepers, man. What about Carson Wentz? I got more sleepers that I want to get to, but we're going to talk some bust. The Tony Cincata is going to join us on the program today. Always good times talking fantasy sports with Tony Cincata. So as you can tell, we got a lot of stuff to get to on the program today. UFC 214 has come and gone, and I think it's safe to say that John Jones is back, baby. It's hard to argue that he's not the greatest fighter in the history of the UFC. And probably the best mixed martial artist of all time. Not only does John Jones win, but he's just so much better than his opponents. Even though four of his last five fights, they actually did go the distance before the third round TKO finish of Daniel Cormier the other night. It's his dominance in the cage. No one's really given him a fight. You know, the first fight against Cormier, eh. We all know the biggest challenger ever against John Jones was the white John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson, but we'll get to that in a second. The thing with John Jones is you're the greatest, man, and no one can take this away from you, but you got to stay in the octagon to prove it. You got to string together a couple of years right now of dominance, and he's 30 years old. He's in his athletic prime right now, and if he can stay out of trouble and stay on track, he will cement himself as the greatest fighter of all time. Like, really, who's going to beat him? Nobody's beating him in his division. As much as I want to see Gustafsson get another shot against him, you know, John Jones would be a heavy favorite, and rightfully so. You know, I've made a mistake. I've never bet against John Jones ever, you know, except the two times he fought Daniel Cormier. And, you know, deep down inside, I knew both times that John Jones was going to win, but I got suckered in by the line. But we've heard people say it before, there's no value in a line if the fight's going to lose, right? Oh, a lot of value with the Rams, plus 14.5. Not when they lose by 24, there was no value. John Jones, just absolutely dominant. And what's amazing about this, Daniel Cormier really probably might be the greatest lightweight, light heavyweight after John Jones ever. He just can't beat John Jones. It's just one of those freaking deals. It reminded me of the Buffalo Bills. You know, the Bills were the best in the AFC, you know, four times in a row, but they just couldn't win. They couldn't be the best. They were the bridesmaids, but they just couldn't get it done and be the best. John Jones, clearly the best. Now, I mentioned Gustafson. I do believe that John Jones should fight Alexander Gustafson again. John Jones has taken this division hostage over the years. It's been a long freaking time, man, and we've been stuck in this Cormier-Jones stuff. So now we can finally move on. But I don't think it's fair to the rest of the division if Jones moves on to the heavyweight division just yet. Now, if you've been paying attention, you probably heard John Jones was asked a question during a Facebook Live Q&A. What do you think would happen if you fought Brock Lesnar? And he didn't even insult Brock Lesnar. He said, Brock Lesnar's a hell of a fighter. He's a massive dude, but I think I could do okay against him. Brock Lesnar didn't like that at all. And Brock Lesnar never responds to any of this crap. But he obviously didn't like this at all because he told the Associated Press, he told Jones, anytime, anywhere. So, of course, after on Saturday night, John Jones calls out Brock Lesnar, says, hey, Brock, if you want to get your ass kicked by a dude that weighs 40 pounds lighter than you, then get in a cage with me. Brock Lesnar once again responded after the fact, stating, be careful what you wish for, young man. So clearly, Brock Lesnar's not adverse to this. Now, Brock Lesnar, man, the guy's a beast, he's a bull, we know all that. But with that being stated, John Jones is a pretty big dude, and he'll just kick him in the head like he kicked Brock Lesnar in the head. I want to see him fight Gustafson, and so do a lot of other fighters who say, you know what, it would be complete garbage if Brock Lesnar's even allowed back in the UFC. And the fact is, if Brock came back, you know the guy would just juice up again because nothing happens. He's going to retire after. It would probably be his last fight anyways. Listen, I'm not opposed to these super fights. And even me, I can't lie. Hey, John Jones versus Brock Lesnar, you're telling me that's not a cool Saturday night? Of course it is. But I don't mind the super fights. But what I hate is guys that win the championship and I don't want to fight anybody besides guys in their own damn division or the top contenders. That's my biggest beef with Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor's an awesome UFC fighter, all right? The guy's awesome. But it's easier to be a champion if you're going to get the belt and then never actually defend it. And you know when he comes back, he ain't fighting Khabib. He ain't going to fight Tony Ferguson. He's going to fight Nate Diaz again. So I just don't want to see John Jones go down this road. Fight Gustafson, then move up to heavyweight and become the heavyweight champion and prove yourself as really the greatest fighter of all time. Now, the bottom line is, Conor McGregor might be the richest UFC fighter of all time with his $100 million payday that he's got coming, even though word is he's only going to be keeping about 40% of that. But nevertheless, he's going to be rich. He's going to be richer than any UFC fighter ever was. But the bottom line is, he's not the best fighter that ever was. John Jones is. Game Time Decisions continues.
Many fantasy football players are focusing on their upcoming drafts later this summer. But the smart fantasy owner knows there's another big draft before the one where you pick the players. The first step in building a winner for the 2017 season is to draft the best team of experts for your preseason prep. So make the right selection and pick the squad at rotoexperts.com by purchasing the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. The Roto Experts roster features FSWA inaugural Hall of Famer and former Fantasy Football Writer of the Year Scott Engel, nationally acclaimed top ranker Jake Seeley, 2015 and 16 FSWA award winners Bobby McMahon and Brandon Murchison, and many more analysis with impressive stats. They bring you a draft package bursting with all-pro analysis and in-season coverage that'll guide you to title glory. So pick the team to help you build the right team. Make your first important selection of the 2017 season now and get the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package from rotoexperts.com. Be sure to enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for your discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. The Tony Sincotta will join us in a couple of moments. We'll talk some fantasy football fever in the air. We'll take a look at a couple of potential busts, a couple of players that I think are a little bit overrated. Not that they're good, not good football players, but I just think for fantasy purposes, they're being a little bit overvalued coming into the year. Last year, we gave you some strong sleepers. We're going to continue with some sleepers. It's not like we're done with the Fantasy Football Talk. We're just getting started. We are done with our team-by-team previews, though. It's hard to believe we've arrived on our 32nd and final and last team preview, the L.A. Rams, we break down on the program today. But without further ado, let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. ProSportsInfo.com is Steve's website. He's also one of the cover's experts. Steve, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Doing well, Gabe.
So, Steve, your Major League Baseball power rankings released today, every Monday, over at covers.com. The number one ranked Los Angeles Dodgers did it again last night. Another epic comeback. But not only did they come back, they came back twice. It's unbelievable. They were down 1-0. They score the tying run in the ninth. Then in the 11th, they give up a run. And you figure, oh, well, man, all right. Now they're really done. No. They grind away. They find a way. And they got a dude in his first ever Major League Baseball at-bat in the 11th inning on Sunday Night Baseball on national television, Kyle Farmer, with two strikes. It's a two-out, two-strike double into the corner. Well, pops it into the corner. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I always do my power rankings on Sunday evening, and it works out well because there's all-day games. You know, so basically with the power rankings, I start fresh every Monday morning, and we just kind of, you know, run them through the week. And last night I had the rankings done, and the Dodger game goes to extra innings, and I'm waiting so I can update it. And I'm waiting, and it's about another hour. I'm waiting. You know. So if it hadn't been the number one team in my power rankings, I wouldn't have really cared. The Giants are second to last. You know, I would have just put in a couple tidbits and been done with it. But the Dodgers are the team right now, and I wanted to have that number one spot as accurate as possible. And I'd mentioned actually going in that they were 24-10 against left-handed starters. And granted, the game went to extra innings, but technically they faced a left-handed starter last night in Bumgarner. So I wanted to update that, and they went to 25-10. But I actually gave up, updated everything, and sent it over to covers, then sent it to you guys. And right as I was sending it, the game finally ended. So I was able to update the divisional record. One thing that was interesting, though, is I put they were 47-14 this year against non-division opponents. And they were only 26-17 against the West. Now they're 27-17. But had they lost that game like they very well could have last night, they would have only been 26-18 versus 47-14 against all the other teams in the major leagues.
What's amazing to me is I read in your power poll here, the Dodgers have been favored in 39 straight baseball games.
Yeah, and here's what's crazy, Gabe. When I was looking at it, they've been almost a 200 favorite or more in every game the past couple weeks. So they haven't even been close to being a dog. They were like a minus $1.10 favorite about 20 games ago. And I actually cut it off because it was around Pick'em about 40-some games ago, and they were an underdog once and then another five favorites. So they've actually been an underdog, a true plus-money dog, only once in like the last 45
was it against Cleveland?
Games overall.
I would imagine it was against Cleveland off the top of my head. They went to Cleveland. It's the only time I can think, and I think they were even slight favorites in most of those games.
What's also amazing, if you dig down farther, 28th in my rankings is the White Sox. They've gone 3-17 their last 20. They beat the Indians yesterday, but they're still just 3-17 their last 20. They've been an underdog in every one of those games. So, you know, I'm not saying that the White Sox are good because there's a reason they're an underdog, but they've played some really tough teams. And meanwhile, the Dodgers have played – they actually haven't played some easy teams, but they've played a few easy teams. But, yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, the Dodgers have been favored in every game. They've won almost every one. The White Sox have been an underdog in every game. They've lost 17 of the 20. So you always have to dig a little deeper.
And now the Dodgers head east. They're in Atlanta tomorrow for three games, and then they face the Mets for four at Citi Field in New York City.
Yeah, I think at some point we're going to get some value playing against the Dodgers. We've talked about this for a few weeks now. I mean, when they're 200 or 300 favorites in games,
yeah,
you only have to win one out of three times, one out of two times, you're making money. So I think we're going to want to pick some spots here coming up. They've had such an easy road here the last couple of months. I think at some point we'll get some value going against them.
We have to keep our eye on the trade deadline. It's at 4 o'clock Eastern today, Steve. The Astros picked up Francisco Liriano from the Toronto Blue Jays. Just to add a little bit of depth, they're going to use him as a reliever. They didn't give up anybody off the roster, from what I understand. It was a player. Who was it? Aoki. All right, so Aoki. Now they love the Japanese players in Toronto, don't they? They really do. The last Japanese guy. What was the guy? Kawasaki? What was his name? Kawasaki? Yeah, Kawasaki. It was the hottest T-shirt in the city for some reason. The guy was terrible. So, yeah, the Rays and the Astros. So it's Cobb and Morton. Astros lost 2 of 3, and they're pretty beat up right now. And another team, you know, the Dodgers just keep winning all the time, even though they don't have to. you look at the Nationals, and we'll get to the Nationals in a second, in an interesting spot, already sort of playing out the string for the last 2 months. Similar situation with Houston. Is this, you're looking to fade the Astros a little bit right now?
Yeah, I actually mentioned in my power rankings that their one weakness is their bullpen. So, you know, if they picked up a little help there, that's a good move. Tampa Bay's 12th in my rankings. They really had a bad weekend. They lost 3 out of 4 against the Yankees. That was their chance to kind of stay in the American League East race, maybe the wild card race. I think the Rays are in some trouble now. Alex Cobb gets the call tonight. He's won 3 straight decisions. Toronto's actually quietly won 5 of their last 7. You know, we talked about the Blue Jays unloading some players, so they're actually playing okay, even though they're out of the East there. But I really think Tampa's on the outside looking in. Houston's still the team to beat in the American League, it looks like. But I do think there'll be some value fading here over the next couple months.
We should note the Astros gave up 32 runs in their last 4 games. They are 9-4, and Charlie Morton's 14 in his starts this year. You look at this game. I'm not in a hurry to take the Rays here either. They're lingering, but they're a cold team. They've lost 3 of 4 and 7 of their last 10. So let's get to a team who you've got ranked number 10 in your power poll, taking on the 17th ranked team in the Kansas City Royals. The Royals have been a must play on a daily basis. I've been playing them on a daily basis. I thought that they would win the series against Boston this weekend. They did. They took 2 of 3. Now they roll into Baltimore. Earlier in the morning, Kansas City were minus 115. I see it's a pick'em now, minus 110. But this is a scorching team, man. 9-1 in their last 10. Danny Duffy on the hill. He's given up 2 runs or less in 7 of his last 10 starts. Orioles have won 2 straight baseball games. But you look at the pitching matchup tonight, man. They got Jimenez on the hill. He's 1-4 with an 8.28 earned run average in his last 5 starts.
Yeah, the reason this line has dropped is actually been some sharp money on Baltimore today, believe it or not. It's hard to imagine anybody be backing Jimenez. He's been that bad, as you mentioned. The sharp money's actually been on Baltimore for about a week now. I've been putting that on Twitter each day. They rode them against the Rangers this past weekend, and Baltimore took 2 out of 3, put up 10 runs in the first half of the game yesterday, and then just kind of coasted after that. So they should be pretty fresh and rested returning home tonight. Kansas City, though, like you said, Gabe, they've been incredible. They were dead last, 30th in my power rankings a couple months ago. Now they're top 10, and they deserve to be. They've been as good as anybody in the league the last couple months, and it's really been the offense. The over is probably worth a look here. Yeah. I used the over in a couple of the Oriole-Ranger games. I cashed it yesterday quite easily, and as you said, Kansas City's been smacking the ball, and Baltimore Jimenez has just been terrible, so I think the over is probably the way to play it.
I agree. I was going to bring up the total there. All right, another team I know you're high on, and you think they can go to the World Series again. The Cleveland Indians, ranked six in your power poll. A little low, actually. I was surprised, but you call it like you see it at the time. Red Sox are ranked 9th and slipping a little bit right now. Somewhat surprised to see the Tribe favored here. The Sox did lose 2 of 3 to the Royals that we just talked about. We got Clevinger versus Doug Fister on the hill, and Fister's fisted his backers. Any time he's on the hill, you know, it's hard to take these guys. And the fact of the matter is, man, the Red Sox have lost 6 of their last 8 games, have lost 7 of their last 10 games. Even though they're at home, it's hard to back the Sox right now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, look, Cleveland 9-1 their last 10, even though they lost to the White Sox yesterday. They were on a 9-game win streak before that. They have had a pretty easy schedule since the break. You know, they got swept by Oakland, then they struggled with San Francisco, then they won 9 in a row against mostly Toronto and the Angels and the White Sox, you know, all non-playoff teams. So they're stepping up in class here tonight. We'll see how they do. I still think Cleveland will be the American League team to beat. I know I have them behind the Astros, but they're still second highest in the American League in my rankings. Boston's 4th behind the Yankees in the American League in my rankings. So these are 2 possible World Series teams. I think the situation probably sets up a little bit better for Boston tonight at home. But both these teams have been kind of up and down. Cleveland's been hot recently, but they haven't really faced any good teams, so this will be a step up in class tonight.
You know, Clevinger, first time he's ever pitching at Fenway Park, but he is 4-1 on the road this year. That's something that caught my eye. All right, I mentioned the Washington Nationals earlier. They're ranked number 3 in your power poll. Minus 135 tonight in Miami against the Marlins. Marlins actually playing some decent baseball as of late, Steve, as you wrote. Giancarlo Stanton's just freaking crushing it, man. What does he have, 4 multi-hit home runs, multi-home run games in the month of July?
Yeah, I mean, Washington's that team that's really difficult to handicap right now because they have nothing to play for. I mean, I guess they're maybe trying to soar up, you know, home field advantage in a later round, but they're going to win the division. It's a foregone conclusion. when the World Series, at the All-Star break, when the adjusted odds came out, they were 1-100 to win the division a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, I'd never seen anything like that in baseball. So this thing is over. And they've been playing that way. You know, they've lost two of their last three. They're just 3-3 their last six. They're just 5-5 their last 10. They've been a 500 team the last couple weeks. So it's a little dicey to handicap them to be laying money line prices with them on any given night.
They have a hot pitcher on the hill as well tonight. They've got a hot pitcher. And, you know, Gio Gonzalez goes. I don't like really picking on Gio. It's weird. Gio's actually better on the road than he is at home. He's 7-3 on the road with a 3.50 earned run average.
Yeah, I think his overall the earned run average is better at home, but you know, his road starts have been pretty good from a WHIP perspective. 60 strikeouts in 72 innings. He's been solid all around. Their bullpen is better now that they picked up the two guys, you know, Madsen and Doolittle from Oakland a couple weeks ago, and their offense is still solid. It's just that night to night basis. You know, their motivation, their focus is always a concern, and now they're switching cities. So, do they become more focused because they're in a new city, or is it, you know, the other way around?
All right. So, we want to remind people once again: 4 o'clock Eastern is the deadline. So, you will be able to know what the rosters are going to look like. But with players being traded, you know, some of them might not be in a lineup tonight, so it could be a tricky night for DFS purposes. All right, Steve. I talked about it on a weekly basis. You and I both discussed this about, you know, Joe Gibbs was eventually going to get out of the winner's circle. He did with Hamlin, but then we talked about it with Kyle Busch. You knew he was going to win. The guy was just dominant every week. He was leading laps all the freaking time, but he just couldn't get the W. We talked about it on Friday. Should have loaded up on him, but he, you know, just didn't pay enough, Steve, right? You know, it's hard to bet a NASCAR guy at plus 333, man.
Yeah, a guy that hasn't won for 36 straight races, you're getting 3-1 odds. I don't blame you. I mean, there was no value from a fantasy perspective because, once again, he started on the pole. I mean, you know, obviously, well, there was value because he had a good fantasy day, but the risk-reward is terrible from, like, a daily fantasy thing when the guy's on the pole because he has nowhere to go but down unless he wins the race, and that's what he did. But, once again, Martin Truex Jr. was the other car to beat, even with two pit crew members suspended, no drop-off there. And he gave Bush a little bump afterwards. I guess everything's fine. I think everything was always fine with Truex. Kyle was the one that was, you know, upset. And now that he's got that win, I think he'll cool off. Denny Hamlin was very strong once again. Another team. In fact, six of the top nine yesterday, Gabe, were the four Gibbs drivers and the two Furniture Row drivers, Jones and Truex, which are basically the Gibbs team. So six of the nine were the Gibbs team Toyotas yesterday. That's how dominant they've been this year.
Peaking at the right time. I mean, they didn't win a lot. They didn't win early, but, you know, things are starting to come together for them. You know, not that, yep. Listen, Kyle was going to make the playoffs anyways. He was pretty comfortable, but, you know, he was getting frustrated. They were frustrated in the garage. He gets the win. Hamlin's in right now. So things are starting to come together for him a little bit. We know that Truex, not really a member of the team, but sort of, you know, sharing the data. Joe Gibbs Racing's a hot team right now going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, Suarez is in the Edwards car. He had a top 10 run. I don't think he'll get a win to get in, but he's a live dog. Eric Jones, the 77, you know, he's had some top fives this year. I don't think he'll get a win either here in the last few races, but he has a chance. Kenseth is the guy that's on the outside looking in. He's going to probably have to get a win. And we talk about Logano. You know, he won that race in Richmond. Him and Keselowski were the best cars for the first 2 months. He wins at Richmond, and then he finishes 21st or worse the next four races after
27th yesterday. 27th
yesterday.
He's
done nothing since. I know, and I'll tell you, he's not going to make the chase unless he wins. And he's got a chance at some of the tracks coming up, but something just isn't right there. And it just shows they must have been doing some serious cheating.
Some serious cheating. I know. He finished 27th yesterday. He's now in 18th place. He's on the outside looking in. You know, he's got five races left, but up next is Watkins Glen, Steve. And he did win Watkins Glen 2 years ago, 2015. He won Watkins Glen. But he's running out of opportunities. This might be one of his better chances here because the road course is there's only really a few limited amount of guys that are really good at this stuff.
Right, and here's the thing, too, about whatever the violation was, it affects you at other tracks than Watkins Glen. The road course is the one track where the setup is totally different.
That's what I was thinking, Steve. This is one where it could be a little bit of an equalizer because on the speedways and on the cookie cutters, it ain't working for him right now.
Exactly right, because whatever he was doing, he's not doing anymore, and that's why he's finishing outside the top 20 on these other tracks. So this is the week for him to win. And here's what's crazy, Gabe. Kyle Busch, first-time winner yesterday, 13 different winners, and I think that's excluding Logano. So if Logano's win it counted, we'd have 14 different winners already with like three or four races to go for the 16th spot. So it's really been a great season to watch. And it's just been kind of crazy all the different winners we've had. We could have another one this week. I mean, this track is wide open for a first-time winner.
You know, Keselowski, I think he was six yesterday, so he wasn't terrible. But we haven't talked about him in a hell of a long time either. And you brought it up, teammate of Logano.
Right. No, I think the same thing happened to Keselowski. He dropped off substantially as well. I mean, something was going on there. And that's why I mentioned we see that with, like, the Toyotas. If something happens with Kyle Busch or Martin Truex's team, boy, will we start selling them until we make sure they're okay. I thought we maybe saw that this week with two pit crew members being suspended from Truex's team for the next three races, but he finished third still, so it didn't look like that affected him.
You know, it's amazing how history repeats itself, Steve. Jimmy Johnson used to love it here. He won three times, not so much anymore. He's actually crashed in three of his last four trips here. It's unbelievable.
Well, just look at the Toyotas in general. I mentioned the six Gibbs cars were top nine yesterday. And the Toyotas changed this year. They have a new design. And if you look at the cars, they're quite different looking in the front compared to the Fords and Chevys, which is unusual. You know, the last couple of years, I've said manufacturer doesn't matter. The Toyotas are faster this year. It's really that clear cut. And, you know, Hendrick, Jimmy Johnson, Chase Elliott's been okay, but Dale Earnhardt Jr. has been terrible. Johnson hasn't been very dominant. In fact, his only three top fives, I believe, were the three races he won this year. He hasn't been top five in any other race. So you really have to look at Kyle Busch, Truex. You know, that's really been the drivers each and every week. This week is different because it's a road course, but going forward, it's going to be the same way.
I look forward to breaking down Watkins Glen later in the week. Thanks for the time, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts. Check him out at covers for his baseball picks. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk some fantasy football with Tony Sincotta coming up next.
Quarterback to receiver hookups. Running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to the National Football League, a regular season, as well as the preseason. And don't forget, you can play preseason DFS as well. Fantasy football fever is in the air. That's why we want to remind you to go over to rotoexperts.com/discount. Promo code RAGE. Promo code RAGE. Get 20% off. I think it works out to about $31 for the year. You're going to get an entire package of experts, articles, videos, advice, rankings, and everything else in between. So in other words, for about $31, you're going to win your fantasy football league. You're going to be smarter than your buddies are. Let's bring in Tony Sincotta right now to try to make us all a little bit smarter. The Tony Sincotta. What's going on, Tony?
You know, you're a pretty intelligent guy, so I thought maybe I'd ask you this question. And you know a lot besides sports. You're a well-traveled man. You know a lot.
You might be overhyping me a bit here, but I'll take it, Tony. So what do you got for us?
In America, we have a lot of older men that are not attractive, and they're older, and they're always with beautiful Asian women. How do they attract these beautiful Asian women?
I don't know. I'm thinking of a politically correct answer here. I'm assuming money.
Oh, okay.
Money. They probably watch your and my show, and they're rich.
Yeah.
It's all the winners. Except that doesn't explain how come I don't have any hot Asian chick in my life.
I mean, either. I'm like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of depressing if you think about it. Thanks for depressing me now, Tony. Thanks for depressing me. You know what my problem is? That's exactly it. I'm not rich enough for the Asian chicks.
This is our bus segment, folks.
The bus segment. My dating life. All right. So speaking of bus, and yeah, there's a different type of bus here. Speaking of bus, Tony, all right, let's jump in. And this is a football player that I'm not a hater. So when I say these guys are bus, it doesn't mean I think they're going to be terrible or they're going to be a fantasy bus per se. But I think this guy is being a little bit overrated and going to be drafted a little bit too high. And I'm talking about Melvin Gordon with the L.A. Chargers. I see his ADP is 5 at the running back position. And I get it. Anthony Lynn's the new coach there. And people, oh, Anthony Lynn's a running back coach. He's a running back coach in Buffalo. And, oh, look how much they ran in Buffalo. First off, Buffalo's been running the ball like 500-600 times a year for the last 3-4 years, with or without Anthony Lynn. Secondly, Melvin Gordon's not LeSean McCoy, and Phillip Rivers isn't Tyrod Taylor. Wisenhunt is the offensive coordinator here. This is Phillip Rivers' team. The San Diego Chargers like to throw the football and stretch the field. I would expect them to continue to do so. I'm not overly concerned with the durability factor. People, oh, he's going to get hurt. You know, he's played in 14 games last year, 13 in year one. But I am a little bit concerned by the fact that he's only averaged 3.7 yards a carry in his two-year NFL career. He went from 3.5 to 3.9 last year. So I guess I'd like to see him get past that four-yard barrier. He does catch some balls out of the backfield. He showed nice hands there. That does give him some attraction. But I think he's going too high at 5. What do you think?
Here's the thing. I can make the argument both ways. I think that 5 is good because the usage rate, and we don't get that many running backs that stay on the field all the time. Here's the truth, though. He's touchdown dependent. He had 12 touchdowns last season. Then you go back to 2015, Danny Woodhead got the goal line carries when they were both healthy, and he had 0 touchdowns. You mentioned the low yards per carry. So there are red flags, certainly, but I look at the usage rate. I think he is being a little overdrafted, but I could see it going both ways. But the big problem I have is he needs the 12 touchdowns. You're right about the catches out of the backfield. 40 catches is nice. But if he doesn't get double-digit touchdowns, he can't live up to that.
You know, and you raise a good point. You raise good points right there. So I ask you, do you like him better than Devontae Freeman?
You know what? I took Devonta Freeman early when I was a month or two ago, and now I've been taking Gordon. I think Devonta Freeman's severely underrated, and I'm going to go back, and I feel like I've made a mistake, and I'm on here. We're telling you about all our flaws today, and I'm going back to Devonta Freeman.
Because, yeah, I'm just saying, I like Freeman better, and he's going after Gordon.
Yep.
I like Jordan Howard better due to a thing, and a great point you raised about Gordon and the fact with the usage rate. He's the guy, and they don't have a lot of other guys, and he is very versatile. He cut down on the fumbles as well. I'm not overly criticizing him, but I think this belief that suddenly Phillip Rivers is only going to throw the football 17 times a game, like really? Like, who's the star of the team, guys? And like, Winston Hunt's coming over here as the OC. All right, and Anthony Lynn, he's not the OC. Now he's the head coach. Doesn't mean that he's going to be running the ball on every play. But I do like Freeman better, and I like Jordan Howard better even. I just like Jordan Howard's usage rate, and I know they're going to get him the ball, and I know the Bears' passing game is going to suck as well.
Yeah, that's the whole problem, though, with the Bears. It's just how many points you can figure they put up. If that's a team that averages 17 points a game, and then you're looking at only 2 touchdowns, does he get in the end zone? And it comes back again, where you're speculating on how many times San Diego is going to give him the ball at the goal line. Nobody got the ball from the 3-yard line in more than him last season. He needs to get those carries again.
You like him better than Jay Ajayi?
Yeah, I do. I that Miami offense, I love the coach. I thought he did a great job rebounding after a hard start. But Ajayi put up a couple big games last year, and I see this more as a short passing game and use the running game there. Of course, we know Ajayi already dealing with a concussion now, it looks like, in training camp. I think a lot can go wrong with Ajayi. I'm kind of avoiding him.
You know, I like Ajayi as a player, and like you said, I like Gase as a coach.
Yeah.
But Gase isn't reliant on him. Like, he sort of uses him, but you know, I'm not comfortable. It's not like I know he's going to get the ball 22 times a game. He just won't.
They left him off the plane the first game last year. Like, he ran for back-to-back 200-yard games.
Yeah.
He didn't even dress for the first game.
You see, that's what I'm saying. You know, we're going to get to another guy later in the week. Are you buying into Devontae Parker this year? I fell for it last year. I know year 3 of wide receivers is sort of that breakout year. I overvalued him last year, so I don't know what to do this year.
I want to buy into him, but I think it's all relative where he's going. Where he's going right now is a little more. So if he drops a little down the board, here's the thing. They're a short passing game. So you got Landry on the other side. How many big plays can you get when you're throwing the ball 7 yards down the field? And how many catches can you get? All these guys need to catch 10 balls, and you already have Jarvis Landry doing that. It's going to be tough for both of them to excel.
And we know that Tannehill locks in on Landry too. You know, so you know Landry's going to get his. All right, here's a guy I think we agree on being a potential bust this year. And he's going to be fun to watch, and he'll score a couple of touchdowns. But I don't think he should be the 10th running back, ADP 10. And I'm talking about beast mode, Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, my God. Like, this is crazy. So people are jumping all over him because of that Oakland Raiders offensive line. I get that. Now you come to the Raiders saying, hey, we're going to give him less than 200 calories, try to keep him in the Raiders uniform all season long. I look at this guy. He's about 25 pounds heavier than he was in a Seattle uniform. I don't see this guy lasting. I don't see this guy being the main back. What you're counting on is the Raiders turning into the New England Patriots and giving this guy the ball inside the 5-yard line, and he's not going to be that guy to get 18 touchdowns. So I have no idea what people are doing here.
Yeah, not to mention the Raiders threw it 37.7 times last year.
Michael Crabtree is automatic down there.
Yeah, like exactly. Like they throw the football. What I find amazing about Lynch is, like you said, we saw a couple of videos in non-contact drills in which he ran past a few people. Oh, look at him go. Look at him go. And then conversely, I saw him in a soccer game, and he looked kind of fat again. You saw that?
Yeah.
He's running around in his sandals. I was like, I don't know, man. Is this the same guy I just saw running on the field 2 weeks ago? And it's funny, though. Everybody kills every running back that's over 30 years old. Yet nobody's bringing this up with Lynch that he's 31. They're all like, oh, Lynch is back. Lynch is back. Like you said, it wouldn't shock me if he got hurt. Not to mention, he's got to face the Broncos twice. You know, they're not easy to run on. You know, can't see the Chiefs. Not easy to run on.
Exactly.
Like, you know, even the Chargers have improved in this. Like, it's a tough defensive division. You know, I look at Leonard Fournette going 11th. I'd way rather have him. He's going to get the ball all the time.
Absolutely. Fournette absolutely would be the guy over Marshawn Lynch. I look at it that this whole thing is, you go back to 2015 when Lynch was still an active player, Thomas Rawls had a better season behind the same offensive line. And we don't even talk about Thomas Rawls this year.
Yeah, I like Gurley better at 12. And, you know, I know this is bold, but I think Crowell is a better pick at 15 than Lynch at 10.
You know what? You're not far off there. The only thing that I worry about Crowell is the Duke Johnson talk, right?
Yeah.
Duke Johnson ball. But I've heard that every year for 2 years, so I want to see it before I believe it.
Suppose he looks real good this year, though, Tony.
I want to bust him over 1,000 yards, Crowell, this year. Lock it down, 952 last
year. Duke is part of the all training camp team. Sammy Watkins, Duke Johnson, all these guys. I can't believe time always flies here. Maybe we'll do another one later in the week. Thanks for the time, Tony.
Who's better than you?
You are. Hey, you, Tony. Hey, quickly, we got a minute. Christian McCaffrey, ADP 14. I don't know about this guy. I don't know. Cam Newton doesn't throw to running backs. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem. Cam Newton's completed the 6th worst completions in the history of football last season. Now we're asking him to change his game, throw short passes in the backfield. I think that's a big problem. McCaffrey can look as good as he wants. McCaffrey could be the most skilled receiver out of the running back position. Someone has to get him the ball. The quarterback hasn't shown the ability to do that.
And Jonathan Stewart's a quality back. It's not like they're not going to give him the ball anymore, right? So
he's going to get 200 carries.
So, yeah, you're taking McCaffrey, ADP 14, and he's going to be a gadget player.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like maybe he's going to be great. Maybe, I don't know. He's going to be a gadget player out of the gate. Like you said, that's not in Newton's nature. We've talked about it with Cam Newton as well. This guy, you get inside the 10-yard line, he has a nose for the end zone, man. He ain't dinking dunking. He doesn't even like handing it off. And now I was thinking about this, Tony, with the new celebration rule. Where you're allowed to do stuff. You really think Cam's going to be in a hurry to give McCaffrey a touchdown? He's going to be thinking, no, it's Superman time. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Under 6 touchdowns, Christian McCaffrey this season.
Yeah, I don't like him. I think he's going too high. He could be a good player, but I think he's going too high. ADP 14. Thanks, Tony.
Take care, my man.
There's Tony Sincata. Check out Tony on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific. He's on all night till 3 a.m. Game Time Decisions continues. We'll come back. We'll talk some L.A. Ram football.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rishard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to NFL kickoff. Fantasy football fever in the air. Go over to rotoexperts.com/discount. Promo code RAGE. Promo code RAGE. Get 20% off. With the 20% off, it works out to like $31, guys. You get the complete package, rankings, videos, expert analysis from all the Roto Expert. Really, really smart guys, award-winning fantasy gurus. So essentially, for $31, $32, you're going to win your fantasy football league. We've had a lot of fun breaking down every team's schedule and odds so far. We arrived with our final preview, the LA Rams. There's a lot of excitement around this team last year. They were moving back to Los Angeles. Todd Gurley was coming off a great rookie season, the Offensive Rookie of the Year. They were on Hard Knocks. They traded up to get the number one pick in the draft and took Cal quarterback Jared Goff. Well, the excitement didn't last that very long. The season was a train wreck. Jared Goff was one of the worst rookie quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League. And in fact, he really was. Like, his numbers match up with Ryan Leaf's, all right, as like amongst the worst of all time of throwing 200 passes as a rookie. But I don't think he threw 200. Like, I think he threw, like, what, 112 or something like that? He only played in 7 football games. But nevertheless, it was a freaking train wreck, all right? Fisher's gone. They're not on Hard Knocks, and they're kind of flying under the radar right now. Sean McVay takes over. The guy's 31 years old. You know, Sean McVay was 13 years old, man, when the Rams won their last Super Bowl. But I like the move of bringing Wade Phillips in. Because, you know, you're McVay, you might be a little offensive guru and genius and all that type of stuff, but the bottom line is you're 31 years old. There's a lot of things that you haven't seen before. It's tough if you're 51 or 61 as a head coach in the National Football League for the first time. So I love the fact that he brings Wade Phillips in. Wade's not going to be gunning for your job. Wade's seen it all over the years. And, you know, not only will Wade be good defensive coordinator, but he's going to be able to help you just handle things as a head coach as well. The Rams are 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. Like, really? Like, I don't know, man. Like, I thought you guys wanted money in Las Vegas. Who the hell's going to bet on the Rams to win the Super Bowl at 100-1? Like, would you take the Rams to win the Super Bowl at 500-1 right now? You'd have to offer me 10,000-1. Like, it's preposterous. At least, like, you know, at least give me something here. Yeah, 50-1 to win the NFC. Oh, yeah, that's happening. 20-1 to win a division. All right, the win total is 5.5. And for the record, you know, I don't see a lot of season previews actually out yet. I think that's why ours are getting a lot of hits, because we're the first ones out of the gate for the most part. But I'm actually seeing a lot of people who think this Rams team's like a 7-8 win team and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know, man. Send me some of the bath salt that you're taking because, you know, if you think the Rams are going to win 8 games, man, you know what? I want to be your bookie. All right, the biggest reason they brought McVay in was to help Jared Goff. I'm going to admit right now, I like Jared Goff coming out of Cal. I thought that Jared Goff could be a successful NFL quarterback, so I can't abandon that. I did. I liked him. I can't take that back. He was terrible, all right? Finished with a quarterback rating of 63.6. The biggest concern was just the inaccuracy, the arm weakness, the one hops, the lack of confidence, and everything else in between. But he is more confident this year. I love the fact that they brought in the Whitworth dude from Cincinnati, man. That guy's a monster. He's going to be protecting Jared's blind side. But the fact of the matter is, he only played in 7 games last year. All right? He didn't even start in all those games. He only played in 7 games. He's still essentially a rookie right now. And he has so much work to do and so far to go. Even if he's much better, it's not going to be good enough. And it's not like he has a ton of weapons to work with either. Now, he does have Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley was a stud in his rookie year. He couldn't get on track last year. The 3.2 yards per carry was very, very disturbing. But the Rams' offensive line freaking fell apart like Jeff Fisher's career did last year, all right? It was terrible. You know, they were getting a quarterback hit. They couldn't run block. They couldn't pass block. They couldn't protect anything, man. Like I mentioned, they bring in Andrew Whitworth. I think this is going to help a lot. It's going to help Gurley a lot as well, one of the best linemen in the league. I like Gurley as sort of a bounce back in fantasy for fantasy purposes, just because he can't be as bad as he was last year. And I think that they are going to look to run the football a lot. We should note, one thing that McVay likes to do is utilize the tight ends. We saw that with Jordan Reed a lot. So Tyler Higbee could have an opportunity to make some plays at the tight end position if Goff is able to get him the football. But, you know, you've got a quarterback that's going to struggle on a young guy. You know, it'd be nice if you had some big weapons for him. And you've got some pedestrian wide receivers here. And, they're small wide receivers as well. Robert Woods is good. I'm a Buffalo Bill fan, so I know Robert Woods. I've always thought Robert Woods was underrated. And now he's overpaid. So good for you, Robert. Good for you. You went from underrated in Buffalo to overpaid in L.A., baby. Life's good for Robert Woods, but it's not going to be once the season starts. Tavon Austin's Tavon Austin, man. A guy's going to make a couple of plays, and then he's going to freaking disappear. You can't count on Tavon Austin to be a starting wide receiver. The guy's a gadget player. He's not a bona fide, legitimate NFL wide receiver. They're in a lot of trouble right there. You know, they put up a league-worst 262 yards a game last year. They can really only do better. They only scored 14 points a game, guys. I just don't see how much better they are. You know, they're going to be a little better. Let's say they go from 14 points a game to 17 points a game. They gave up 49 sacks, too. The offense is in a lot of trouble. I don't think it's going to be all that much better this year. The defense is rock solid, but they're on the field too much, all right? You know, you look at time of possession, and the Rams only had the football for 29 minutes and 40 seconds a game. That's too long, for the defense to be on the field. You got to sustain some drives so you can let these studs on defense rest up a little bit. But Wade Phillips is a great defensive mind. He comes in here. They're going to make the switch from the 4-3 to the 3-4. I think Aaron Dalton, one of the more underrated players in the NFL, is really going to thrive in this system. Similar situation with Robert Quinn. Quinn's going to be flying around right now. Look for Quinn to be able to get to the quarterback. They've got talent on the defensive side of the football. I like the Connor Barwin. I like Connor Barwin a lot. Ogletree's in a contract here. He's going to be playing for money. You know, one thing, though, with all this talent that was surprising to me, and Wade Phillips is going to be able to address this, is they only got to the quarterback 31 times last year. Too much talent, not enough sacks. Secondary kind of sucks. Trumaine Johnson's okay on the other side of the football field. You're just hoping that a bunch of dudes are going to be able to get it done. The schedule is listed as the 17th most difficult in the league. They play the AFC South and the NFC East. It's pretty challenging, man. They host Andrew Luck and the Colts in week one. I have a hard time seeing Goff beating Luck in this spot. They get the Redskins in week two. So they get to open with two home games. And then they go to San Francisco. They go to Dallas. I see 1-3 at best right there. Seattle come into L.A. in week five. One thing that's strange, the Rams always actually beat the Seahawks or tie them or whatever, give them all they can freaking handle. They're at Jacksonville. That Cardinal game is actually in London. Like I said earlier, I see a lot of people liking this Rams team in a big bounce-back spot. I know they won four games under difficult circumstances last year, but I'm not ready to say that this is a six-win team, and the total's 5.5. I think they're probably 4-12 again, maybe 5-11. I just don't see 6-10. Give me under 5.5 for the LA Rams.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. And it's power-packed with so much more, including fully sortable player projections and a custom cheat sheet generator. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Home is where the heart is, or something like that. Isn't that like a Hallmark phrase? Home is where the heart is. Well, I'll tell you what, Our money is not at home tonight. Our honey is on the road. All right, we're laying it down, man. And we're taking the Kansas City Royals in this spot. You know, the Royals have been as sweet as honey and have been making money. Red hot, man. How do we not take these guys? Game's basically a pick 'em against the Orioles. Similar situation with the Tribe. Red Sox are in trouble right now. They've lost six of the last eight. Give me the Indians. Mariners. Mariners are 8-1 on Monday nights for some reason this year. +105 and Giants +120. Hey, and we like the dogs tonight. May the winners be yours.